Welcome to UBC Insiders On Air for the week of October 9th, the show that brings you incisive commentary, interviews, analysis, and the best informed rumor mill around on UBC campus life and politics. You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasted from unceded Musqueam territory in Vancouver. My name is Mayan Kreitzman, with a cold.
And I'm Neil Janssen. You can always check out our website, ubcinsiders.ca, for written versions of some of what we talk about on air, and an awesome archive full of 8 years of breaking stories and busting balls all over the university.
On today's show, we have our weekly roundup. Anne Kessler will be joining us for that. In the second segment, we'll have an interview with Joanne Fox, the principal and academic director of UBC's English Language International Student Targeted First Year Program, Vantage College. And after that, Anne is sticking around to debrief about Joanne's interview with us.
To start things off, we've got Anne Kessler in the studio with us. Anne is the former VP academic of the AMS and is an editor with the leftist campus rag, The Talon. She's also a sixth-year human geography student. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So our top story today is...
Breaking news.
UBC has found some vintage Wedgwood china in the old faculty club, and it's selling it off to support the United Way campaign. And that's happening on Wednesday, October 14th, from 4 to 6 at Sage Bistro. So I just thought that was very key information to share with everybody. And according to the photo, it is quite cute.
It's absolutely adorable.
What better way to celebrate UBC's history than by selling it off?
Honestly, this like charms me in every possible way. It's like starting from $5, it's kind of affordable, and you can get like adorable vintage china with the UBC insignia on it.
Do they say how old it is?
They don't say how old it is, but they do say that the queen might have drunk out of it. So, mind you, she's still alive, so I don't know how old it is. Yeah, that would be interesting.
Did the world leaders at APEC drink out of it? That's important.
Right. So for all the Antiques Roadshow buffs, come on out to hobnob with other china connoisseurs at Sage Bistro on the 14th.
Our next story is that voting in the federal election has been ongoing on campus already. Elections Canada opened a poll in the old sub. Students could vote by special ballot, which meant you could vote in any riding in Canada, depending on where you hail from. And from October 9th to 12th, you can still vote in the sub, but only if you are registered in the Vancouver Quadra riding, which is the one that UBC is in.
I just voted right before we are taping this with a special ballot, and it was very touching.
And the AMS has a really great website up with all the information. The thing I like most about their website is the little geometric shapes that are kind of floating everywhere that I don't really understand, but they're really cute.
Like little dandruff on the screen. Yeah, I noticed that the website is really flashy and cool, too. Okay, moving on, we've got the library garden redesign. The space in between Kerner and Main Library is being redesigned, and campus and community planning is seeking input about that. What do you think about that redesign, Anne?
I think it's long overdue. I mean, that to me, that's one of the kind of awkward spaces on campus that is often underused. It kind of, it slopes down awkwardly, and I was reading through the documents and they reference Sedgwick Library, and I had no idea what Sedgwick Library is until I read a bit more, and turns out it's the underground portion of Kerner Library that got renamed when the sort of upper part of Kerner Library got rebuilt.
Who knew?
But I think it's an underused space, and I think, you know, with building the Indian Residential School Center, I think they could do some really interesting things with the space.
Right. So just to be clear, that there's a building that's going to go into that library garden area, which is this Indian Residential School History and Dialogue Center. And that building is funded, I think, to the tune of $6 million. The rest of the library garden redesign is not funded yet. Neil, will it still go to board if they haven't found a donor by that time?
It depends on whether they feel like this is a project that needs a donor to go forward. This is sort of along the lines of all their public realm improvements. The most notable of that, of course, being Main Mall, which is fabulous, and they did a great job. But I don't think there is any donor for those public realm improvements. It's something they just paid for because they think it's worthwhile.
Right. So then what do they mean when they say it's not funded yet?
Well, they haven't decided where the money's coming from. Obviously, if they could get a donor, they'd like that. And if not, they may have to fund it out of the central budget. But they still need to make the decision that they will use the central budget to fund it.
I mean, they're going to build a building right in the middle of it. You're going to probably wreck the garden and might as well spend a bit more money and make it something really nice.
What surprised me was that most of the budget is devoted to the landscaping, not the building.
Well, they're separate projects. They just happen to be taking place at the same time right beside each other.
Thankfully, the clock tower is not in jeopardy. We still have that emblem of 70s architecture to look up to.
So in other news, Mayan, maybe you can be our inside source on this. It was recently made public that John Robinson, who is basically UBC's sustainability guru, is leaving the university for the University of Toronto. What can you tell us about that?
John Robinson is a faculty member in my home department, and we've sort of known that he's leaving for months now, but it wasn't formal until a week ago when he sent out an email to the department sort of announcing it, that he's joining his wife, who got a job at U of T, 51% at the Monk School and 49% at the School of the Environment, which is curious, but I think it just means that he reports directly to Stephen Toop. So it's going to be a bit of a reunion for Stephen and John, who were sort of allies at UBC. The main question for UBC is, without John Robinson, who's really pushed forward the sustainability agenda in a lot of different realms, what's going to happen to that agenda at UBC?
Did you work with him a lot as VP Academic, Anne?
Somewhat, especially around campus planning stuff. I think was probably where I saw him most, actually. I'm in geography, and so I think there's two ways you could look at it. It could potentially happen that he has been the voice that pushed us, and it won't be as strong anymore. However, I think we're pretty far down along this track at this point. I mean, you look at what the Senate is doing around the sustainability minor that is potentially a minor that every undergraduate student on campus could take and could fit into whatever their degree is. And we're pretty far along in a lot of those things, so I'd be surprised if it was a sudden drop-off.
Yeah, in general, I agree. And I think part of John's mission when he was here was to institutionalize a lot of the initiatives and a lot of the lessons learned from SIRS, for example. There's now a process where those kind of get translated into other buildings on campus, etc. Nonetheless, he was the one to spearhead many of these projects. And so it's a big loss to the university to have him leave, and leave in a kind of sudden way. Like,
well, how could it be sudden? You said you've known about it for months.
I know, but then, like, why didn't he announce it earlier? I don't know. It's just funny.
And it's not even very public. I tried to Google it earlier and didn't come up with anything. So.
Yeah, there's nothing online. It's just this one email that went out to the department. And I know that he had a goodbye party with his students like months ago. So speaking of the brain drain to U of T.
Our former president, Arvind Gupta, has been announced as a visiting professor for the year. I guess he just felt the need to get out of town.
Right. So this solves the awkward walking around campus and having to field questions dilemma for Arvind.
I think that's probably a good move for him. I fully feel the, you know, you don't want people kind of badgering you. You know, he signed a non-disclosure agreement. What will happen with that non-disclosure agreement is a different thing, but, you know, I can understand needing some space.
He gets to double dip, which is nice.
He gets the big severance package plus, I guess, whatever he's making at U of T for the year.
Should we call people in Toronto that we know and get them to badger him on campus there?
Go find his new office somewhere in computer science, and maybe it's right beside the Monk School. Maybe he and Stephen are going to hang out.
Maybe. Stephen was here on campus last week. We tried to get him in for an interview, but he was apparently very busy.
What was he doing on campus?
He was here for the centennial.
Oh, of course.
But don't you think with Gupta so quickly moving to U of T, like, that is quite a fast move?
This is not a very high-risk move for them. They're not signing him on as a faculty full-time. They're just giving him an escape route.
Yeah, but to me it seems to underline the permanency of his departure from UBC, and I would find it hard to believe that he would be kind of skulking back here at the end of the year.
It's hard to say. I mean, my understanding is he has pretty strong roots in Vancouver. His wife is an MD here. I think all three of his daughters have gone through UBC, and one of them, I believe, is still here. So on the one hand, maybe he just needs a year off, but it wouldn't surprise me significantly if in a year there's a permanent appointment at U of T or somewhere else in the country.
So speaking of the fallout from the Gupta affair, the next news item is about this FOI document dump about the Gupta affair from the University Council office. Neil, what do you know about that?
Not much other than that it was inevitable that the university was going to get lots of freedom of information requests asking for schedules or emails or other communications about events in the lead up to Gupta's resignation and all of the stuff that happened with the board. What the university has decided to do is to answer every single request they received all at once in one big package and probably make it just absolutely public on the online.
It's questionable, though, how much is going to actually be in that, because they're notorious for sort of crossing out the very details you actually want to know. And I'm skeptical about the date as well. I mean, they've pushed it back once already, but last year I made a Freedom of Information Act request to the university that took them 9 months. It was a long time, and I suspect there's going to be a heck of a lot of documents here. But this is much more public, so they might, you know, that might put their feet to the fire a little bit more to actually be prompt.
This idea of making it a big document dump is probably as much of a media strategy as it is an actual access to information issue. I won't be shocked if it lands in people's inboxes Friday at 4:55 p.m.
Right, and actually in the letter that Bob Mackin got as a reply to his FOI request, it is November 13th, which is the revised deadline, which is a Friday, so big surprise.
While you're here, Anne, do you want to give us a little rundown of what's happening with the Talon this year?
Sure. Well, the big news is that we have our first print edition launched as of last Friday. So we had a launch party just here on campus, and we're up and running as per usual. We've got lots of articles coming out, and we're also trying to come out a little bit more into sort of multimedia. We've got some poetry and podcasts and that kind of thing coming forward.
Can I share one of my gripes with the Talon from last year?
Just one?
Well, so there was shit hitting the fan because of this whole BDS stuff on campus. But in the Talon, it was like literally every other article was about that. And I just thought that was like obsessive and compulsive. Why feed into that frenzy?
Well, I mean, I can't really speak for what the collective was doing last year since I wasn't on the collective. But from what I remember of that happening, a lot of it was letters from people writing in about the issue. So it wasn't necessarily even the collective writing things, but it was a lot of students writing in. And I think we probably became the focus of that because we're sort of the lefty paper on campus. So they'd rather send it to us than to the UBC. And so that's probably what happened.
Fair enough. Although 50% of the articles, yeah, that's a lot of volume.
And what sort of stories are you personally working on?
Well, I have something that should hopefully be coming out next week around sort of some of my thoughts around the Gupta thing. And also something that I talked about a lot last year when I was on the MS was around mental health, especially around academics on campus. And so I've sort of been brewing something in my mind. So in a couple weeks, that might happen.
Well, thank you so much to Anne Kessler for joining us in the studio.
Thanks so much for having me.
Having trouble finding affordable fresh baked goods and coffee? Come down to Agora Cafe located in the McMillan Building at UBC. There's also space available to study.
You are listening to UBC Insiders On Air. Our interview guest today is Joanne Fox, the Principal and Academic Director of Vantage College. Vantage College is a program exclusively for international students whose English proficiency scores are too low to qualify for standard admission to UBC. For those students, Vantage offers an 11-month program with a curriculum similar to first-year arts or sciences, but with more English language instruction and integrated throughout. The goal is that after completion of the program, the students transfer into second-year UBC as part of the general student body.
Dr. Fox is a geneticist by training and a UBC alumna. After a decade in various teaching roles at UBC, she started with Vantage College in 2013 overseeing the science program. In 2014, she was elevated to the position of academic director. Then, in 2015, she also managed to add Principal of Vantage College to her title after the previous principal, James Ridge, moved east to become the city manager in Burlington, Ontario. That's a pretty impressive ascension to the top. Welcome to the show.
Thanks.
So maybe a good place to start is the history of Vantage College. You've been there pretty much since the beginning, so can you give us a brief rundown of when the idea started and how it came to exist?
Yeah, so actually I wasn't there right at the outset. I know there was a committee that involved sort of a community of people on campus looking at the idea. That involved students as well as faculty. And so I actually came in once the program was already established by Senate. And what I came in to do was to help coordinate the design of the science project. And then, as you just said, I've now been able to sort of look at the program design as a whole. My role is to kind of facilitate and create this space we have in this program. And as you mentioned, it's a space for helping students with the transition to be successful at their post-secondary education.
This is kind of a new thing for UBC. Where does the college fit in UBC's overall structure? Is it right to think of it like a faculty that only deals with a specialized program for first-year students?
It is an academic unit that was approved by Senate. So I think in some senses it's right to think of it like a faculty, but it is unique, right? So it's a pretty specific faculty that offers this first-year program, right? Yeah. And you sort of said, where does it fit? So it is part of UBC. So the students who enter in the Vantage 1 program come in and they are UBC students.
I guess I'm wondering, your title is principal and academic director, but should we think of you as Dean Fox?
It's principal. So it's a little bit different, right? So it's not a unit that has a big research budget or that kind of things. It's a solely teaching specific unit. And actually, that's what appealed to me. You sort of mentioned that I have a long history of teaching. It's what I really enjoy. And that's sort of what drew me to this role of taking the teaching I do and now looking at how do we create those kinds of experiences for students at a program level.
Right. And one of the other things I'll note is that when James Ridge started as principal, his title was principal and CEO. And I've noticed you've dropped that, thankfully.
My understanding was his title was principal.
And CEO.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, it's more accurate to think of it like an academic unit on campus. In fact, that's how it's defined by Senate.
The main thing for someone who hasn't read up so much about Vantage College, but who's kind of heard about it from the media, and it's gotten some flack from the media as being a revenue-generating sort of cash cow for UBC, taking advantage of international students that are willing to pay a premium for a Canadian mm-hmm. education, and B, being a sort of way for students that have the means to buy their way around English language requirements. Or it seems that there was some confusion in the Senate around valuation of English proficiency at the end of the Vantage year. So those are the main kind of two things that I've heard flying around, and I'd be curious to hear what you think of both of those big criticisms.
Yeah, and so I do think there was some negative media that was really unfortunate. It was based on quite a bit of misinformation.
So set us straight.
Yeah, I'd love to do that. So one of the pieces is that I mentioned already that Vantage creates a new opportunity for a student to pursue a degree at UBC who meets the competitive academic standards. The English language standard is adjusted, but there still is a standard. And the whole program is designed to help students improve their academic English. It's pretty intensive for first-year experience extended over 11 months. The other thing that I think you spoke to that I'd like to correct is that Vantage is creating new opportunities for students. We offer financial aid, so we have students from all different parts of the world, represented 29 different countries. 1 in 7 students from Vantage are supported by financial aid.
Okay, but is it fair to say that UBC would not be doing this if it wasn't making money off of it?
No, I don't think that's fair to say. I think this is about really creating a space where we can think about how we help students be successful with their transition from post-secondary to their studies in higher education. The people who work in this program, the students who enter it, are all pretty dedicated to student success. So
that can be true, and the revenue-generating model can also be true. Those aren't mutually exclusive.
Fair enough. But I think what this project is about really creating that space where we can be innovative with teaching and learning.
Vantage, in its first year of operation, which was last year, it offered two programs, one for students wanting to go into arts and one for students wanting to go into sciences. And this year, two additional streams were introduced, one for management students and one for applied sciences students, basically engineers. Whereas the students in the arts and sciences go into second year at the Vancouver campus, at the end of the management and applied sciences streams, most of the students will end up at the Okanagan campus. Why were the streams designed that way? Why not have them go to the Okanagan campus since the beginning?
So we designed the streams to be sort of with an embedded kind of approach to students studying their first year courses, and the academic English training is kind of embedded and woven, interwoven throughout all of their educational experiences. So that was what was behind the design. And the sort of idea behind Vantage was to create this first year experience.
Neil just asked you about why they're going to the Okanagan in the second year.
Yeah, and important to that is sort of what is the basis of the design, because it's important to why the question of why wouldn't you go to the Okanagan at the outset. Applied science and management streams offer students this dual campus experience where they come to Vancouver for the winter session and then the Okanagan campus for the summer session. So they basically do this academic experience at both campuses. So it was the combination of the factors of the integrated design and sort of where the students were streaming that led us to that design of a dual campus experience where students spend part of the year at the Vancouver campus, part of the year at the Okanagan, and then they, depending on which faculty stream they're in, you either stream to the Okanagan or you go through the specialization process that engineers do in second year.
I wanted to also ask about the Vantage enrollment figures. When Vantage was first launched, UBC had set rather optimistic enrollment targets for them that had them going from 0 to 1,000 students in 3 years. And for example, the target enrollment for the first year of the program was 300, and the actual enrollment was 188. So where do things stand on that front now?
Yeah, so you're right. We launched with 188 students across two streams, and that actually turned out to be a really good thing, right? Because we were able to work with a smaller set of students and really, we were creating this kind of really enriched first-year experience. So having that smaller group, me being able to take them through the first time we delivered this program, that was a really good thing. Where we're at this year is that we've seen about 45% growth. We have intake this year of 269 students.
And I assume there's studies underway to follow these students after their Vantage year?
Yes, very much so. So we will follow these students as they progress all the way through their degrees. We are carrying out extensive sort of follow-ups during and after the program to make sure that we sort of track student success. With the smaller numbers and the launch, we were actually, many of our students described it as feeling like family. So I actually sort of see Vantage students all over campus when I walk through campus. So it's sort of, we want to keep that family feel.
Well, that was actually one of the criticisms of the program when it was launched by student senators and student leaders, was that these people are going through all their classes in a cohort. They're also living together, and that it might create sort of a more high school-like atmosphere or a cliquey atmosphere that might make it harder for them to integrate once they reach a general student body year two. Is that
fair? I don't think it's a fair criticism, because I think we've been very intentional. But I also think we've made some very intentional adjustments from first year to second year about sort of integration. So one of the adjustments we've made is that students are now living in mixed residence communities, so across all the different residence buildings on campus.
Although when Orchard Commons is completed, which is the building behind McMillan,
they will still live in mixed communities.
Okay.
So that's another piece of misinformation that is out there that we want to correct, is that Orchard is sort of building space for the whole campus community to be another first-year residence.
Okay.
So Vantage students will live in it, but so will domestic students and so will international students. You also asked kind of about students and their transition to second year. We've really been intentional about thinking about how can we help students with that transition and put in place things like, for example, advising, where there's a shared advisor position that helps act as a bridge, because you can get to know the same advisor you know in your Vantage year, who will also then be embedded into the Faculty of Science. Our students from our first year have also organized a peer helper program, which is a pretty cool initiative for both the second year students to be peer leaders and for their sort of friends who were in the program in the first year, but also to sort of share that experience of all the things you learn in your first year as you make that transition into your university studies.
Well, I'm grateful to have learned a bit more about Vantage College and maybe to dissipate some of media coverage, although I think maybe some real questions about the role of specialized internationally geared programs in the university persist. But it was definitely a pleasure to talk to you, Joanne.
Yeah.
And we thank you for coming.
Yeah, well, I'm glad that you gave me the opportunity to sort of show how enthusiastic I am. And I do think there is a need for these programs that help students with these transitions. So I appreciate the opportunity.
Hung on to Anne here in the studio, since Anne has quite a bit of experience as the VP Academic of the AMS last year.
And as a student senator.
Yeah, with dealing with all sorts of Vantage College negotiations and meetings. So we've hung on to her in the studio to hear what she thinks about the interview we had with Joanne Fox. What's your take on that?
Well, I think there definitely has been a lot of things that Vantage College has done to improve. They've listened to what students have said. So one of the things that she was talking about was housing and how students are much happier to be in sort of housing that's mixed with all first years, because they're just students. They don't want to be in this separate little box. They want to get to know their peers, because from second year onwards, they're going to be with everyone. So of course they want to do that. And so in lots of ways, they have listened to what students have told them. But I think there's a lot of areas that are still lacking. And a caveat that I haven't been super involved in this stuff for the past 5 months. But for example, last year we spent a lot of time talking to them about what kind of evaluation they were doing, and not just evaluation on, you know, what grades they're getting and how that compares to what other first years in the same courses are getting, but also to their sense of belonging, their sense of community, how much fun they're having, all of those really important things. And we did finally get something from them in, I think, about February of last year. And
so let's set the scene here. It was a meeting of Student Senate Caucus, and officials from Vantage College were coming to present to Student Senate Caucus about a survey that they had administered to Vantage students about their satisfaction so far. What was in that survey?
Well, there was a two-page document that they gave us that essentially it was a bunch of happy faces and sad faces and stuff on it. A lot of us are very senior students. Lots of us are grad students, and we have lots of experience with research. And it wasn't the kind of detailed breakdown of these things. It was, oh, here's what we gave the Vantage students, and it's sort of a happy smiley face about how we're feeling about things.
I think the most awkward part of that meeting was there was a chart comparing the grade distribution of Vantage students in some first-year science course against the grade distribution of the overall first-year student body in that science course, and they were trying to show them that they were the same. And then one of the senators asked if the grades had been scaled, and the answer was yes. And so there's no way of knowing, because all the grades had been scaled to be the same shape and distribution.
Well, from my perspective as well, I think that, you know, a lot of first-year science courses, there are people who fail out. And, you know, you see that in the grade distributions. And I think that's fairly normal. But shouldn't students who are in a classroom of 20 or 30 students with very personalized support, shouldn't they be doing way better? In my opinion, they should be doing better than just the same.
Well, and we don't know. They might be doing better, but got scaled down. Who knows? Well, it'll be interesting to see how Vantage plays out over the next couple of years, and whether it develops into exactly what it was supposed to be and funds all the projects that UBC has already spent the money on.
Yeah, what's kind of the most interesting is to see the financial breakdown and how the capital investment in Orchard Commons and in all of the teaching staff and everything else that goes into making a program like this work, if that shakes out financially, and also to see the outcomes for the students. Well, thanks, Anne, for sticking around and chatting with us about that.
No problem.
Well, that's our show. I'm Mayan Kreitzman, and you've been listening to UBC Insiders On Air, broadcast on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. You can follow us on Twitter at UBC Insiders. Check out the blog ubcinsiders.ca, where the podcast is also linked. The permanent home for the podcast is still up in the air, unfortunately, but you can email us. We're both very easy to find on Google. Thank you, Neil.
Thanks, Mayan, and we'll talk to you next week. We'll be interviewing the Faculty Association President, Mark McLean, who's been a busy man in the last few months. Among other topics, we'll talk to him about the fact-finding report about John Montalbano and the Birdall affair.
Can't wait for that. Insiders out.